Hello, I'm Brett Dillon, and this is The Movie Chronicles. Today finds us in the land of darkness, slowly becoming illuminated by Edison's light bulbs. It's the USA in 1898. I know I've taken you here before, but let's face it, there's just so much to see, beginning with the misnamed Native Daughters, director James H. White. In what I hope was a parade celebrating Native American woman, director James White gives us an interestingly composed crowd shot made of vertical lines. The background to the shot is the buildings, with the windows creating vertical stripes across the frame. In the center is the parade, which we can just glimpse over the tops of the heads of the men who are watching. Good on those men for supporting the struggle of the Native American woman. And yes, I'm aware that the use of the term native doesn't reference ordinary English usage. It refers to white, and white only, immigrants, who have been illegally occupying land in the country for several generations. Well, the ladies take a stop for tea, I'll take you to a different tea, the city of New York. Director unknown. A selection of street scenes is frequently interrupted by trolley cars cutting off the frame, interrupting the view up a street. This leads up to a shot featuring a hansom cab. I didn't see that coming, which was also a common complaint about cabs of this era. After the busy pace of the central city, the next shot looks down a calmer avenue before cutting to what looks to me like a theatre crowd waiting outside a theatre. This is a segue into shots of life on the pavements, the bustle of the crowds. Statue of Liberty, director James H. White. This is a tracking shot from a ferry. The image is so grainy it looks like the elegant lady has raised her hand to give the finger to the world. Street Arab, also known as A Street Arab. Director William Heiss. In appearance, our street Arab looks like he is doing an early version of break dancing. What he is doing is an acrobatic act on the street, symbolized by the brick wall behind him. William Heiss cunningly uses the building to create fill lighting, which outlines the body in a 3D effect and almost creates a silhouette effect. The Edison catalog says this film shows one of New York's street gamins going through various acrobatic evolutions. He turns handsprings backward and forward, walks the crab, does cartwheels and other kindred feats. An exceptionally unique performance is his standing on his head and twisting around like a top. It's safe to say he will be bald-headed at an early age. Sea Waves, director William Heiss. Let's open the Edison catalog to the appropriate page. Here we are. Sea Waves shows the beach at Long Branch, New Jersey, immediately after a heavy storm. The breaking waves dash over a row of spikes, throwing a spray high into the air. Even the spray in the US wants to get high. The footage can be imagined as a response to Alice Guy's seascapes that, in turn, were an attempt to romanticize cinema, that is, to create a poetic sense of the raw power of nature. William Heiss interprets power as crude, a male conception of power, as opposed to Alice's more conceptualized model. For Heiss, nature is destructive. For Alice, nature can be both destructive and nurturing. Parade of Chinese, director unknown. Down the street they go with horse-drawn floats. Something Good, Negro Kiss, also known as Negro Kiss. Director William Selig. Actors Gertie Brown and Saint Suttle. A couple kiss and cuddle. For me, there are two things going on in this film. The first is to make fun of the 1896 film showing a white couple kiss. This is how you should do it, the black couple seem to be saying. The second point is a two-parter. The film is giving black people a space on screen and portraying them as human beings. Director William Selig was born on March the 14th, 1864, in Chicago, Illinois, USA, and he died in 1948. William began his working life as an upholsterer until he reconditioned his life to become a vaudeville magician. In 1890, he moved to California to run an orchard. This was a move enforced on William due to ill health. The entertainment business hadn't left his blood because in 1893, he created Selig & Johnson's Colored Minstrels. The troupe featured Burt Williams, who will come into prominence in upcoming years. Selig's troupe toured the USA until, in 1894, he caught a demonstration of the Edison kinetoscope at the Dallas Fair. William was inspired. He was afire with ideas. He returned to Chicago to build his own camera and projection systems with the help of Andrew Shustick. It looks a lot like the pair had retro-engineered the Lumiere system. William formed Selig Polyscope Company, which created the first permanent studio in Los Angeles in 1908, made the first Oz film in 1910, and shot the first cliffhanger serial, The Adventures of Kathleen, 1913. Edison was never going to leave this insult unchallenged and almost immediately began filing lawsuits against the company. Things settled down in 1909 with the Motion Picture Patents Company, in which many U.S. film producers were forced to admit the Edison Company's primacy. This lasted until 1915, when it was recognized to be a monopolistic practice. Around 1911, William began collecting animals that became one of the largest private collections of animals in the world. This became a zoo-stroke-movie studio. This is the same year a disgruntled employee tried to kill him. The decline began around 1914. Feature-length films were becoming the vogue, and William felt this was just a flash in the pan. As a result, he quickly got out of step with the Hollywood mainstream. When the U.S. entered World War I, he lost European sales. Competition from other companies continued to eat away at his profits. The Great Depression played the coup de grace on this slow, sorry decline. Sunset Limited, Southern Pacific Railway, director James H. White. In what looks like a desert location, actually Fingal, California, five men wait at a junction. A train comes from the right of frame and passes. They switch tracks, and a train comes from the left. Wreck of the Battleship Maine, director William Daddy Pally. Remember the Maine, to hell with Spain. That was the rallying cry of journalists keen to report a war by starting one. The Maine exploded in February 1898 in Havana Harbor. There is little in the image to give us a clue as to what we are looking at. The topmost section of the battleship is all we can see as the camera cruises by. The picture quality is not good, and the ravages of time have not helped. Without the title, I would have said I was seeing a fleet of fishing smacks lashed together. Once again, we need the Edison catalogue to guide us to the interpretation of what we are seeing. This tells us it was taken in Havana Harbor from a moving launch and shows the wreck of the Maine surrounded by wrecking boats and other vessels. The warped and twisted remains show how thoroughly this immense mass of iron and steel was blown out of all semblance of a vessel. The background of this picture is formed by the shores of Havana Harbor, and as the yacht moves around, a panoramic view of the shore adds an interesting feature. New York Journal Dispatch Yacht Buccaneer. Director, William Daddy Pally. Actor, Carl C. Decker. The Edison catalogue is especially fulsome about this film, and yet manages to make it sound an unappealing entertainment. It writes, shows the dispatch boat of the New York Journal steaming through the water, having aboard the war correspondents. This is one of the fastest yachts in the business. She approaches rapidly, and as she cuts through the sea, her prow throws the water in a white spray on either side. This is an excellent picture of a good subject. The bow waves are especially fine. You will notice how the catalogue fails to conflate a reaction to the war with a poetic concept of photography. This mild form of propaganda still leaves a sour taste in my mouth. The yacht approaches from right of frame, and time flies past us. Actor Carl Decker died in 1941. You'll be hard put to spot him on the Buccaneer. He seems to have got a credit because he had worked with William Pally to cover the funeral procession of those killed on the USS Maine. Carl worked for William Randolph Hearst and covered events leading up to the Spanish-American War. He helped Evangelina Cosio Cisneros to escape from a Spanish prison. She had been arrested as a rebel. The Spanish-American War, from the Edison Company. This compilation of jingoistic films includes U.S. troops landing at Taqueri, Cuba, USS Battleship Indiana, blanket tossing a new recruit, Cuban ambush, Cuban refugees waiting for rations, Morro Castle, Havana Harbor, pack mules with ammunition on the Santiago Trail, Cuba, shooting captured insurgents, the fleet steaming up North River, troop ships for the Philippines, capture of trenches at Candaba, Colonel Funston swimming in the Baglag River, Filipinos retreat from trenches, U.S. troops and Red Cross in the trenches before Caloocan, General Lee's procession, Havana. There are so many flag-waving sequences here that I was beginning to wonder if the U.S. flag was being waved to signal surrender. Most of the films are badly acted reenactments. American Mutoscope released Spanish-American War Scenes in the same year. Observation Train Following Parade, director James H. White. This is a remarkably silly title for a film. It shows New York's welcome to the fleet of Admiral Sampson after the Battle of Santiago Bay in Cuba. Little did the U.S. know at the time what a pain in the butt Cuba was to be. The film is a busy work that takes some time to piece out what is happening. The camera is set high, looking down on the action, and that isn't a help. A crowd surrounds a train that has people on top as it moves through the frame. President McKinley's inspection of Camp Wyckoff, also known as McKinley and Party. Director of Photography, Billy Bitzer. Actors, William McKinley, Russell Alexander Alger, John Jacob Astor, and Garrett A. Hobart. This time I'll turn to the notes of the A&B picture catalogue. Let's have a look. Which begins by noting how popular this film was when shown at the Biograph Theatre. They then settled down to a prosaic description. The picture is taken from a point of view which shows the immense distances of Camp Wyckoff with its multitude of tents in the background. The president with Vice President Hobart and Secretary of War Russell A. Alger appear in an open carriage escorted by a large number of officers. Among them are Generals Wheeler, Gates, and Colonel John Jacob Astor. The picture is brought to a humorous ending by the efforts of a newspaper photographer to get Colonel Astor to pose for a picture. He is unsuccessful, and as the gallant colonel gallops away, the photographer's chagrin is apparent. The camera is placed atop a hill, looking down on the camp as the carriage passes, although I note it stops center frame to make sure the president is in shot. The cameraman takes the opportunity to do a quick pan. The exchange at the end seems to be terse. "No, sir," says Colonel Astor. "President McKinley is not at Camp Wyckoff. That is fake news," and he rides off. Trained Cavalry Horses, director William Daddy Pally. The exercise involves getting the horses to lie down on order, which is an impressive bit of training, although I suspect the horses for this film thought they were just being ordered to take a dust bath. My sympathy went to the riders, who were choking on the dust. Reviewing The Texas at Grant's Tomb, director James H. White. With Grant's tomb in the background, the camera first tracks a tugboat and then two men in a rowboat. We then cut to a close-up of the U.S. flag, which is revealed to be at the prow of the USS Texas. The close-up continues as the vessel steams by the camera. A ferry full of Gorkhas then blocks the view. It passes to reveal the non-pointy end of the thing, which is lined with sailors at the railing. Ooh, I shall be stern with myself over that last line. The film portrays New York City's welcome to Admiral Sampson's fleet after the Battle of Santiago Bay. USS Battleship Indiana, also known as Battleship Indiana. S. Lubin Company or American Mutoscope Company. Two films with the same name were released by two different companies this year. It's hard to tell from the catalogue descriptions which one it was I actually saw. What I saw was the Indiana move by the camera like a tracking shot. It's a bit eerie because you expect it to be the camera moving when really it is the ship. I suspect it probably was the Lubin Company product, also known as Grand Naval Review in New York Harbor, August 20th, 1898, that I saw. The Lubin Company describes the film as the United States fleet which destroyed the fleet of the Spanish Admiral Cervera at Santiago, Cuba. They are, you'll note the cataloguers referring to a sequence or series of films, the grandest naval films ever produced, showing the U.S. fleet of battle-scarred warships, accompanied by gaily decorated river streamers, excursion boats, tugs. The naval heroes can be seen on their respective ships. None but those engaged in the battle were allowed on board, except, yada yada yada, the people who sent them off to die. The other contender comes from the American Mutoscope Company, who describe their film as, "The great battleship is seen just as she appeared, stripped for action, and in her grey war paint in the blockade of Havana Harbor. The battleship is underway and makes a very impressive picture." U.S. Cavalry unloading supplies at Tampa, Florida. Director William Daddy Pally. At a train siding, the troops are unloading a wagon, that is, manhandling it down a ramp while mansplaining why it isn't working. U.S. troops landing at the Kiri, Cuba. Director William Daddy Pally. Flipping the pages of the Edison catalogue, we find the first U.S. troops to land, June 22, 1898. Transports in the distance. Soldiers clamber up boats onto the long railroad pier. What I saw was shot from the pier, left of frame, looking along a pontoon bridge that troops were coming across, with boats disembarking troops, right frame. Pack mules with ammunition on the Santiago Trail, Cuba. Director William Daddy Pally. A group of soldiers and mules amble towards the camera. That's what I saw. The Edison catalogue is not one to let an opportunity for dramatization to amble by them, so it describes the film as a great pack train approaches rapidly, following the grey bell mule. Cowboys dash to and fro, keeping them bunched. Clouds of dust arise as they pass. The question the catalogue raises is, was the film projected to contemporary filmgoers at a faster speed than it was shot in, because in the speed corrected, i.e. from 18 frames per second to 24 frames per second version, the pack mules do not approach rapidly. Let's just put it down to poetic license by the writer rather than a cryptic reference for projectionists to follow. Roosevelt's Rough Riders Embarking for Santiago by unknown. The camera is on the wharf. The Rough Riders are helping to load the cargo. The ship forms the background as we look down the wharf. U.S. infantry supported by Rough Riders. Director, James H. White. Down a road come the infantry, waving the U.S. flag, because otherwise they've got no reason to be invading a foreign country. At the crossroads, they pause to fire before setting off again and skirmish. In what we would now think of as an editing error, the next shot shows the Rough Riders galloping down the road and firing as they ride. The implication of this shot is that the riders are behind the infantry and firing at them. Shooting captured insurgents. Edison Company. This film is infamous as the oldest surviving example of yellow journalism. No, it's not a Chinese film. A group of Cuban rebels, rebel scum, are marched to a wall where they are executed by a firing squad of Spanish soldiers. The only evidence that this has been staged for propaganda purposes is that all the soldiers go for a headshot. The Edison Company described this film as a file of Spanish soldiers line up Cubans against a blank wall and fire a volley. The flash of rifles and drifting smoke make a very striking picture. The lack of value or compassion even given to human life in this description I find very disturbing. I also note it uses the same villa that appears in Cuban Ambush. Troop Ships for the Philippines, director James H. White. The film apparently shows the SS Australia departing from San Francisco. It is shot from another vessel sailing past, forming a kind of pan of the Australia. Next episode, we take a gander at methods of transportation. It's a sure-shod cloud-pleaser, wheelie great, riveting in fact. For more silence, purchase the silent but violent ebook, Movie Chronicles Beginnings, from an e-store near you by gum. Become a Patreon or Buzzsprout supporter and boast about it to all your friends and associates. That tosses. Too timid to get on the ground floor of the next big thing like all the others. Hang on, I could have sold that a little better. Do we have time for take two? No? Okay. Until next time, then, remember, on your bike, Ike.